Talk at 9
with Gushwell Brooks
on 702
for the curious.
Let's kick things off, and we'll start off, of course, with the co-author of that book, which I need to get my hands on, The Bosasa Billions, and that's, of course, with James Brentstein. James, thank you for joining us, and a very interesting time indeed, especially around the issue of Bosasa, state capture, and many of the other interrelated issues happening at the moment in South Africa.
Thanks for having me. Yeah, I'll tell you, it's just what a time indeed. Interesting country that we live in. It just gets more interesting by the day.
Look, I mean, the events of last week obviously gave rise to a lot of speculation, a lot of people asking questions, and we understand why, because Gavin Watson, of course, after that testimony coming through from Angelo Agrizi, you know, was sort of the man at the center of this whole plot, involving Bosasa in particular. And suddenly, you know, we wake up to headlines to the effect that he had just lost his life under very dubious, what seems to be very dubious circumstances. Or is it just, you know, a normal accident and we all just sort of filling in the blanks because of the controversy surrounding this man?
Look, it's all speculation. No matter what, there's no evidence of anything coming that's come out yet. So it's all pure speculation that we can talk about. But certainly the timing is highly suspicious. And certainly the fact that he's not around anymore is letting a lot of other people sleep a lot more comfortably. And sadly, a lot of, the most damning allegations, we will now never be able to get the other side of the story. So, what happened? How did he die? What caused his death? I hope that the full report, I see Minister Mbalula has called for a full report in the investigation. One would hope that is done thoroughly and that we get those answers. And one would hope that it's nothing worse than an accident and that he had a heart attack at 71 under immense stress. It could very simply be something like that. But it could literally, there's a legion of possibilities at this stage.
I mean, I asked this question previously, and then before, and then after this, I will also rope in Kyle to obviously expand on this conversation. But I've asked this question previously of Pieter Louis Maiberg, on his book, Gangster State, unraveling the story of Ace Magashule and some of the state capture allegations that he's obviously uncovered there. But I mean, in this particular instance, you've written the book, The Bosasa Billions. It chronicles to a large extent the tale of state capture and the role that Bosasa has played, in financing and obviously getting huge amounts of money into their own pockets through corruption, et cetera, et cetera. But the key question is that with this, unfortunate, ill-timed demise of Gavin Watson, I mean, do you think that we'll ever get to the bottom of the full story, or is this now, everything has now been sealed?
It's certainly going to keep going. Investigation, it isn't just into Gavin Watson. It's into Bosasa. It's into how they established the 12 billion rands worth of tender network. It's about all the friends and family and contacts and networks, etc. And certainly that'll continue. But it's got to be remembered that Gavin Watson was certainly the key figure, the CEO of this group. No matter how much people paint him as an innocent, faithful man, which many people still believe is the case, he was the CEO of this company. So there's no way, as the CEO of this company, that you did not know about a lot of the shenanigans that has been going on. And there's a lot of evidence to that fact. So a lot that had to be answered. And as you see, there's some key critical things that we will now never fully know. For example, Angelo Agrizi alleges that Gavin Watson took a suitcase full of 300,000 rand in cash to Jacob Zuma. Unless former President Zuma comes out and tells us what happened there, which is probably highly unlikely, that story will never, we'll never know what really happened there.
Yeah, no, it's a difficult one. Let's hear from Kyle. I mean, what the future basically holds in terms of journalism and investigations around this issue. Kyle Cohen, good evening, and thank you for joining us, man.
Thank
Thanks, Kishore. Thanks for having me.
Great one. I mean, you heard my conversation there with James, and it seems that we in a very difficult position at the moment because, and notwithstanding the fact that we don't speak ill of the dead in South Africa, it seems to be the normal course of things because obviously, but, you know, 2-3 weeks ago, if you said the name Gavin Watson, people would probably spit and, you know, say other horrific things around some of the allegations that were directed against him. But now suddenly he was a stalwart, you know, he was a great man, he was a this, a that, and the other. Where do we stand in terms of, you know, reportage, especially when we're looking at Bosasa and the role that Bosasa has played in state capture and the billions that have been made by themselves? And those people that they obviously were, you know, providing patronage for.
Yeah, well, Gershaw, just on that first point, I don't think that, I think you're quite right to say that, you know, Gavin is now being painted as a stalwart and a struggle hero. And it is always, I think what we must keep in the back of our minds, that it is possible for a man to be both a stalwart and a criminal. I think it's quite clear that we have to just keep that in the very forefront of our minds. And, you know, as far as the reportage goes, I mean, we don't stop now just because Gavin is gone. We continue to try and dig down and try and understand really how, as James mentioned, you know, this company went from providing, you know, cleaning services and catering services at mining hostels to making 12 billion rand in just under 15 years. I think we have to understand that, and I think we have to draw back into this nexus, you know, these struggle credentials, these sort of stalwarts of the struggle that helped, you know, ANC comrades in and out of the country and put clothes on their back and gave them a place to sleep at night. And, you know, I think that's where we have to drill back to. It always comes back to people trading on that enterprise, trading on, you know, that sort of struggle, you know, trading on what they did to fight the apartheid regime. And later on in years, they sort of benefit from this. And then we are expected to say, but yes, it's all good and well because, you know, they helped us into a democracy. And yes, I suppose we do have to give Gavin Watson credit for that. And we have always done so. But we cannot go and now ignore things that he has done because 20 years ago, him and his family helped some ANC comrades. It cannot work like that.
I hear what you're saying, and obviously that is the fine line that we always have to draw. And obviously, in terms of complexity of the of human beings and human nature, that is something that we tend to ignore. And that is why, I guess, when we read comic books, when we watch movies, when we watch kiddies programs, there's either a good guy or a bad guy, and no one in between. There's never room for any sense of complexity,
no gray area.
You know, there is no room for complexity where you could be an anti-hero just by way of example. So, I mean, we face this situation at the moment, but I mean, I'd just like to understand where are we going to go now with this particular story? I mean, have we hit a brick wall and it's difficult or impossible to unravel the rest? Because, of course, we know that one of the things that Gavin Watson was supposed to do shortly before his passing, or just soon after, you know, before we knew about his passing, soon after that, he was supposed to obviously go before a tax inquiry. He was supposed to appear also before the Zondo Commission at some stage. And all of that is out of the window. And now he doesn't have an opportunity to actually be questioned by his accusers and, of course, answer important and critical questions.
No, you're completely right, and it does throw considerable hurdles in front of, you know, investigators and for someone, you know, for a commission or a tax inquiry. It makes things exceptionally difficult, if not impossible, because you have to give, you know, the implicated party a right of reply, and obviously in this case it just won't be possible. And like James mentioned, you know, a lot of these things now do run sort of towards the logical end. We'll never know if 300,000 Rand was delivered in a bag to a former president. But I don't really think that we need to stop there and just focus on those sort of things. There are many other people at Bosasa who were involved in this. Certainly Gavin was the driving force. You know, he was the one who brought these ideas about. He was the one who okayed them or rubber stamped them. But it doesn't mean that other people weren't involved and that their knowledge cannot maybe unlock some of these issues. And I think that's very crucial to remember. You know, at the memorial on Friday, a long-time director and spokesperson of Bosasa, Papa Leshabane, said, you know, the tide was turning. He said that the tide was turning, and, you know, Jared Watson, the nephew, also mentioned that, you know, history is being rewritten, and this is a reference to, you know, the media seemingly ignoring Gavin's struggle credentials. And these comments are quite telling. I think from people close to Watson and close to Bosasa, I think they feel that, you know, that some things will now reach a logical conclusion. And that's far from the truth. You know, the NPA is going to continue to bring prosecutions. The Hawks are going to continue to investigate. The State Capture Commission of Inquiry is going to continue to interrogate information implicating other persons at Bosasa. I mean, just as a simple example, when at the memorial on Friday, the person who was directing traffic that was implicated before the Zondo Commission in a video that was secretly recorded as being there on a Saturday morning to pick up a parcel of cash, for example.
Mm.
You know, so individuals like that will definitely be called, and they will definitely then be able to say, well, look, you know, I received an instruction from that person or this person. And there's going to be a trend, Kushal, to try and blame everything on Gavin now, because obviously he's not there to defend himself.
Yeah, yeah.
And we also have to guard against that. Yes, Gavin is the kingpin, but now we can't blame him for everything that was ever done that was could be seen as illegal.
I mean, I heard you agreeing there heavily, James. I mean, that this is unfortunately also what then makes this demise very convenient, is the fact that now you have, you know, as they say, dead men don't tell any lies, or dead men tell no lies, and that is because they can't speak for themselves. They can't actually, he wouldn't be able to defend himself. He wouldn't be able to prove or disprove any allegations against him. So we are in that very interesting quagmire where we never speak evil of the dead, and, you know, he's this great stalwart, and he'll forever be missed, and he will only be remembered for the contribution that he made. Yeah. But simultaneously, you know, now, you know, all kinds of things are going to be thrown at his door, that he was the one that did this. But the key question that I really have around this issue is that a lot of people will turn around, and it's an unfortunate thing that you hear, especially in terms of chatter on talk radio channels and see on social media, where there's almost a reckoning where people say that, no, this is, you know, fine. People's corruption, whether it be Gavin Watson or many of the governing parties members who have been implicated, that this is all fine, guys, because you know what, this the apartheid, for example, the apartheid regime was equally as corrupt, therefore this is also okay. I mean, is it as simple as that?
You're asking me.
I'm asking you, James. I mean, what is the response to that? Because people
whether two evils can be compared to one another, because corruption and stealing from the poorest of and the most desperate amongst us, which are, in a large view, our prisoners in our jails and our youth and people who are being deported out of the country. And literally, if you are getting tenders irregularly and you are getting more than you should, you are stealing from those very desperate and very destitute and poor people. If you want to say that's a lesser evil when compared to apartheid, I don't know. I don't think that, I think wrong is wrong. And we need to stop with this comparison game that we're playing. I think that in a way that's why a lot of people in positions of power are getting away with what they're getting away. These networks of patronage. I find it ridiculous the way that the ANC does not take any action against massively implicated people right at the very top. Cabinet ministers in Cyril Ramaphosa's cabinet right now. Their homes were given hundreds of thousands of rands worth of upgrades, and they find nothing wrong with that. Nothing. And there's just no action taken. And that's one example. We've got MPs, ANC MPs, all went back to Parliament. People who sat on a Correctional Services Portfolio Committee meetings where they covered up for Bosasa for decades. For decades. I find it highly insulting. And then to say, yeah, but in apartheid was worse, or whatever the case might be, it's our time to eat. We've all heard all of those stories.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I hear you. And that's unfortunately, you know, some of the things that we hear. And the only reason why I asked it, I know it's a very facetious question, and it's something that I obviously don't believe myself. But the fact is that unfortunately, these are the things that we hear. Whataboutism, that's what people call it. You know, the whataboutism factor, where I'll point out something that you've done wrong, and then you will automatically point out something I have done wrong.
Yeah.
And somehow that's supposed to square everything up, and then we're supposed to move on from there and continue our lives, because guess what? Both of us have done something remotely wrong on one level or the other.
And we forget about the people, the people who are really still being, you know, paying for
for the benefits that we are getting away with. And those the same people, I suppose, that still got downtrodden under the pipe that are still getting downtrodden today.
No, I hear you. I mean, okay, taking it forward, Kyle, I mean, is there any work being done at the stage that we can look forward to? And apart from that, what I'm really worried about are two things, is that we're seeing plenty of media around this particular issue, right? There's also obviously a lot of other things that's happening, in the public domain, where a lot of information is coming out, whether it be James's book as an example or any of the other books that have come out around state capture. There's a lot in the public domain playing out. But the unfortunate thing is that commissions of inquiries are being held, books are being written, but a lot of people are seeing very little in terms of real consequences. I mean, are we looking forward to any consequences coming forward, especially now that in this instance, the main villain, inverted commas, the one that was supposed to know where all the bodies are buried, finds himself being a buried body himself?
Krishal, it's a difficult question because I think it's a question we all would love to be able to answer with a bit more certainty. You know, the NPA is in a very invidious position in that it is struggling with resources, I think, to tackle these cases. They have 10 to 15 years of backlogged cases that we'd all like to see finalized in some way or the other. You know, to mention a few, we've got VBS that's just been, you know, simmering for about a year now. We've got the Steinhoff saga, which, you know, should have been acted on, I think, months ago. We've got all sorts of, you know, state capture related cases. You know, we had an entire parliamentary inquiry into Eskom and corruption there, and there's just been zero consequences for those people. In fact, some of those people who are very, very seriously implicated are out on Twitter and being interviewed on television as experts, you know. And I think this is a difficult situation that we find ourselves in. The State Capture Commission of Inquiry is going to continue for at least another maybe year and a half to 2 years, at least. And at that stage, maybe the NPA will be in a better position, and that's guaranteeing that our president, you know, survives, you know, his inter-party politics. And in the midst of all of this, you have, you know, people like the Guptas, people like the Gavin Watsons of the world, who go out and they are implicated in this sort of grand corruption. And what is really their saving grace at the end of the day is how much of that money feeds back into the ruling party of our country. You know, in Basasa's case, they donated millions and millions and millions of rands to the ANC over many years. And this is where you find yourself in that position where they have access to these high-ranking politicians because they are benefactors and they are struggle heroes. And what we really need to see, we need to see a breaking of the mold here. We've been talking about this for years now. We need to see a new sort of NPA. We need to see a new sort of, you know, idea surrounding political corruption. We need to have some action. And I think...
But if I can just come in there quickly... If you don't mind, if I can just come in there quickly. I mean, I just want to understand from, talking about that hope and talking about the new, you know, a new system and a new way of doing things. At the moment, we have Shamila Batoi, who is obviously the new head of the NPA. She's the new NDPP. And a lot of people, including myself, are hoping that we're going to see a new broom sweeping clean. That's we're actually going to see real action in this particular instance.
Krishal, yeah, I think that's absolutely key. You know, placing a competent person at the head of such an institution is the first step only towards, you know, sweeping clean. It's not an overnight fix. There are still many layers of individuals who have been entrenched at institutions like these who need to be dealt with. And these things take time and they take effort and they take money to replace those people. And this is what we're struggling with. And right now, I want to jump
in here, Gershul. I want to just point this out. I agree the NPA is critical. And certainly, but I also agree it doesn't help you just change the very top. Those bottom structures have been corrupted for decades. The other challenges, it's the other institutions as well need to come to the party. The Hawks, for example. Don't you find it disgrace? I wrote the Steinhoff book last year, roughly at the same time. It's now been, 20 months, not one person has been charged. The Hawks, to the best of my knowledge, the Hawks have not yet started investigating. Because they don't have a single forensic auditor or chartered accountant in permanent employ at the Hawks in the commercial crimes unit, so they don't have the capacity. So they do nothing. It's nearly 2 years later. We're talking $300 billion in value destruction that got lost. 2 years later, there's been hardly any action taken. And frankly, you know, we keep saying, it's going to happen. They're going to take it. When?
I hear you, and that's exactly what my concern is. I mean, for both of you there, gents, and unfortunately we'll have to wrap it up there. But the big issue that we're faced with at the moment is, I think that we're seeing a lot of the stuff playing out in the media. We're seeing a lot of the stuff playing out in public spaces, like news stories that's for easy consumption. And of course, a little more complex, like the books that people like James and Peter Louis Myburgh and many other people have written, outlining the stuff. And I think that what ultimately is the concern for a lot of us is the fact that ultimately it seems to become nothing else but the domain of actual factual journalism and media work turning into seedy crime novels, if you get my drift. I mean, that's all that it. I'm reading the Ace book at the moment. I'm busy wrapping it up. And goodness me, guys, if you read the thing, it sounds like a seedy crime novel as opposed to something that actually happened in the real world. And I'm pretty sure that when I start plowing through some of your work, I'll find myself in the exact same position, thinking the exact same thing. And I think a lot of us are expecting action and we're not seeing it because these people are maybe in some instances being hauled in front of commissions of inquiry, but they come in, they testify, and then they take off, and then we don't hear from them again. I mean, with all due respect to Angelo Agrizi that came forward and, you know, spent a couple of days in court along with another one of his friends that looked very similar to him, we haven't heard anything since then, and it doesn't seem that justice is being done, and I think that is what's concerning people.
Sorry, James. What you need to remember about that case is that it's already 10 years old by the time that they were prosecuted. So it's not looking very hopeful.
Yeah, and I think that's a problem. Yeah, you wanted to say, James?
The point I just wanted to add in very quickly was I do think that the ANC has the potential to really make a difference. Imagine for a second that politically they really acted out against people that have been implicated of gross corruption and said, before you can be reappointed in a position of power or influence, you must clear your name. Imagine that game changer. It would be incredible, but the opposite is happening. We are seeing people, they keep being redeployed, they just stay in positions where they continue to expand on the networks of influence and patronage, and they become untouchable. Absolutely untouchable. In fact, they progress and they go higher up and higher up. So I think politically there also needs to be a reckoning, and the ANC needs to start standing up and saying, if you're implicated in something, not found guilty, if you're implicated, before you can be reappointed, you need to clear your name first.
Yeah, and I think that would probably be a principle that would need to be applied, and I think applied more broadly as well. But listen, gents, we could talk all night, and it's very clear that we could talk all night because there's plenty to cover around this. But let's leave it at that. Thank you so much. All the best to you both, okay?
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Cheers, man. Cheers. Like, there was James Brent Stein as well as Kyle Cohen, and we were talking obviously about the demise of Gavin Watson, what that basically means, and of course going forward, it's not just the fact that he lost his life and that now we don't know where the bodies are buried, but the fact of the matter is that when are we going to see justice from all of the plethora of stories coming through? Anyway, 25 minutes to go before we get to 10.